Oh, I'm doing this one.
You are, yes. I've somehow tricked you into doing it.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Just try him. I'm Dave, joined by my perfect weapon of a co-host, Ryan.
I'm getting too old for this shit, man.
We are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this week, just try him. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or I don't know.
@moviesonup on the Twitter.
Yeah. I was looking at the other tagline for this movie, which I like so much more. No gun, no knife, no equal. So if you know what tagline...
Either of those come
from. If you know what movie either of those taglines are from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, and whatever else I just said. We kicked off... Busey month. Our Busey month last week with our favorite Busey movies, and Ryan is back, so a big welcome back to Ryan. But we're kicking off back-to-back
Busey. I didn't really go anywhere.
My car broke down. But we're kicking off back-to-back Busey weeks with Lethal Weapon, the 1987 joint directed by Richard Donner, written by Shane Black, one of our favorite screenwriters out there, starring Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, Gary Busey, Mitchell Ryan, Tom Atkins, to name a few. A solid movie. I was 8 when this movie came out, and I remember seeing it in theaters. I believe I remember it being a pretty big hit at the time.
Yes, it was very solid its opening week. It debuted in the catbird seat, number one, grossing about $6.8 million. March 6th, 1987, it was number one, deposing... It's maybe your second favorite Nightmare movie, Dream Warriors?
Dream Warriors is after the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Dream Warriors was number two with $6.7 million, and number three was a movie starring in loose quotation marks, featuring a guy that is featured in our movie next week, Platoon. It's $6 million. Angel Heart, $3.6 million for number four. Number five, Outrageous Fortune. Just over $3 million. It's very top heavy.
It's
the top
March.
Three.
I mean, yeah. But this was March.
Sure. And Dream Warriors came out the week before. Platoon 2 weeks before that. Those three movies I think are really good. The rest, kind of shitty. It went on to gross $65 million domestically, which puts it at 1,087 all time on the domestic charts. Dave, can you guess the movie that is one place above it in 1,086th place?
Biloxi Blues.
I can guarantee you that it is not Biloxi Blues, although it's not too far off from there. It is 2005's remake. We're going to be talking remake a little bit next week. 2005's remake starring Ryan Reynolds, The Amityville Horror. It's $65 million. Yik is correct. And the movie directly below it, 1,088th place. It is a movie that is very near and dear to my heart, has not been remade, but been rebooted very recently and relaunched a television show.
Uncle Buck?
No, it is the Muppet movie from 1979. Yes. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? That one comes in at just over $65 million for 1,088th all time.
So this was commercial. Seemed like a critical success, too. This was Mel Gibson. This was kind of the rise of Mel Gibson, right?
In fairness, like when we talk about its success, this was the least box office-wise successful because it was the franchise kicker-offer, if that's the actual word. The most successful was the second one that made $147 million. So for sure, like it absolutely launched that franchise, and I think it launched Mel Gibson as well.
Because he had had the three Mad Max movies. Other than that, the only thing that really sticks out is The Year of Living Dangerously. So I think Lethal Weapon kind of kicked off because from there he was... The Mad Max introduced us to Mel Gibson.
Yes.
Lethal Weapon really like launched him out there.
Yeah, I think Mad Max specifically. Maybe some of the sequels were a bit more well-received in America, but I mean this was Mel Gibson's first American tentpole, despite the fact it came out in March. For what we got of Mel Gibson going forward, I think it's a much better representation of kind of who he is as an actor, this character of Riggs, because he was charming a little bit. I mean, you can see in his eyes, crazy. And it turns out he actually is a crazy person. So that's kind of in there as well.
I hate that Mel Gibson is such a terrible human being because watching him act, I think, is a joy. It's a buddy cop movie when you want to get down to it. But
certainly.
But it's one of the better action movies. It's a perfectly crafted action movie. It's a well-done buddy cop movie, and there's depth there. His character is suicidal, like straight-up suicidal.
Absolutely.
And kind of psychotic. Like, the scenes where he can go nuts, he does it very, very well. And I really enjoyed seeing Mel Gibson act. Even something in, like, a few years ago when he tried to come back with The Beaver, I thought he was really good in that. And this is, like, one of the essential Mel Gibson roles because it introduced us, but it gave him range. He got to be charming. He got to crack jokes. He got to act. He had substance there.
You mentioned that he was crazy and psychotic. That's usually, in an action movie, that's the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
Mel Gibson, I'm not going to say that he was like the first anti-hero in film, because that's not anywhere near true. But I think he sort of brought that idea to a whole new level. You have a guy that is a multifaceted hero, which by and large you don't get. The hero is just the good guy who's pretty infallible, and there's nothing wrong with him. Nowadays, even comic book characters, every hero we see nowadays, there seems to be some kind of flaw to him. Goodness knows, Riggs had a lot of flaws.
And so many buddy comedies kind of try too hard to have this odd couple pairing. This one made sense. Mm. He's this former special ops guy who was doing narcotics but was a little too violent for narcotics, so they moved him to the less violent world of homicide, which that part I still don't get. But then you're forcing him to partner up with Murtaugh, who's been around for a while. He's a family guy, just ready to be done. So that dynamic was cool.
And in fairness, I talked about the idea that the anti-hero is advanced by Mel Gibson in this. I think that grizzled detective that's too old for this shit, I mean, that's like sort of a cliche now.
Danny Glover was, he brought that.
Yeah.
Like that
Mel Gibson may not have been the original anti-hero, but Danny Glover may very well have been the original detective who's, you know, 2 weeks away from retirement, which is such a trope now.
Yeah.
Because he did it so well in this.
Yeah. But going back to Riggs, where you mentioned like the psychotic, the mental stuff that he had is usually the villain. That's why I think Busey does so well in this movie, because Busey is the bad guy. They're both special ops. They have the same kind of history. Riggs and Joshua in this movie are very, very similar.
They're closer together than Murtaugh and Riggs are.
Yeah, yeah. They're coming from the same place, just with different motivations. And I think that's why Busey excels so much in this movie, because Busey's at his best when he's cranked up to 11. And when you have Mel Gibson bringing it and being that crazy and psychotic, I think Busey's one of the only ones that can out-crazy and psychotic that. So you kind of let Busey loose, and just let him go and just say, you be you, Gary, Bew, just go do what you want to do. And out-crazy.
When did this turn into a poetry slam?
Out-crazy this guy.
I need to stop this.
He worked out as an awesome villain. And Shane Black is such a good writer. And I touched on this. It's a perfectly crafted action movie. It's a perfectly paced movie because it's, I don't look at it as an action movie like, say, Die Hard. I look at this more as a character movie. I think this is more about the characters than the action.
I think there's more layers to Riggs than there was John McClane. He was kind of like an everyman who was put in an impossible situation and he's doing the best he can. Where this one does seem like, okay, you're seeing the struggle that Riggs has against Joshua, but you're also seeing the struggle he has with himself. I think it's every bit the action movie that Die Hard is. I mean, they both went on to launch pretty successful franchises. If I had to watch one Christmas movie, I would pick Die Hard over Lethal Weapon. But that's, you know, saying I would like a pepperoni pizza over a sausage pizza.
Yeah.
I like them both.
And I guess I look at them different because I feel like I'm not a fan of the sequels of Lethal Weapon 2, 3, and 4. 2 was okay, but it started to become a caricature of itself, especially by the 4th. Because this was...
By the 4th, they're both too old for this shit.
Oh, yeah. And it was just all joke heavy. And this wasn't a joke delivery movie, and I felt like by three,
yeah.
Well, that's what these were.
When they started adding third wheels, when it was Pesci or Chris Rock,
yeah.
Then absolutely. But as a buddy cop movie, which is sort of a trope now, as an action movie, two mismatched partners, I think this is the best movie that fits in that circular hole of, all right, let's get two cops together that don't get along and blah, blah, blah. I mean, there are some good examples, but that genre is littered with crap. And as bad as the sequels were, three and four, as crappy as they were, I mean, I still like Lethal Weapon 4. I'll watch it if it's on. Jet Li's goddamn amazing. And that scene where, like, there's the shootout, like, on the freeway, and they're tearing up that, like, modular home or whatever the hell's going on, like, that's amazing. There's some great stunts in these movies, and there's great visuals that I think sometimes action movies, just let's see how many people we can kill. And I don't think that's always the best way to be memorable, do stunts. And I think that's where that's where Die Hard really, because I mean, everybody remembers stunts from these movies.
And the high body count desensitizes. You know, in Die Hard, if he walks in, if they walk in and just shoot up the place, and then kill Mr. Yakamori, whatever. He's one of many. Mm. But when you just shoot Mr. Yakamori, or Takatomi.
Nakatomi.
Yeah.
That's it.
And when you shoot the
apologies to the Asian listeners.
The cokehead. Those mean something because, yeah, that's only two body counts out of all these hostages. Those two deaths matter. And Die Hard especially, where there's only six or seven of the bad guys, so you kind of get to know them. So as they die, they kind of mean more instead of just, oh, hey, here's one bad guy that you know.
They're
and
just
seven red
terrorists.
Shirts. Yeah, and seven red shirts that are going to die. So high body count doesn't really matter, but it's a good crime movie, too. What happens with a lot of buddy cop movies is they're working on a case, and the case is just kind of there. Like that, it's
because they have to be doing something.
Yes, it's just there. This, like, you have the twist and turn. You have Hunsicker, Tom Atkins, who kind of gets the ball rolling on this and then realizes, oh, he has more to do with it than he wanted to admit. That opens up everything else. They're actually being detectives and not just running around shooting things, which that's how a lot of these end up, which I feel like the sequels did.
I think they do suffer from sequel syndrome, where you just have to consistently, instead of just doing what was successful the first time, you just keep ratcheting things up, and it becomes less what was effective. It gets lost in sort of the noise.
Although 2 had the toilet scene,
yeah,
which I think is just a fantastic scene, and the dynamic between these two is so good. Because even when you think of actors, like how many times are you going to expect to see Mel Gibson and Danny Glover? Like, they're two actors that you don't expect to see in this kind of role together. And the chemistry is fantastic between them, even in the first movie, because when they hate each other, like, you can tell that they legit hate each other. And then you see them grow, and their chemistry, it worked well because you kind of saw it grow. And when they start to kind of respect each other after the one gunfight, and then through the movie, you know, him giving him the shell that he was going to kill himself with. Like, I'm a big arc fan, and the friendship arc is done very, very well in this movie.
And you don't really get that in the sequels, because it's so well established in the first one that's part of what gets lost in the noise. Because, well, okay, we can't do that again.
They're
so
not an odd couple anymore
by
the second and third and fourth. And I mean, they don't have to be odd couples to work. Like, Bad Boys, they were best friends at the beginning of the movie. It worked. The direction from Donner was good. The action scenes are good. Gary Busey is really, really good. You don't get to say that very often. But as a villain, he was good. Some of the crime plots get a little too ridiculous, but this actually was grounded and made sense, like with the laundering and the drugs and the hookers and stuff.
Lots of coke, lots of hookers. It seems
Christmas.
Like a perfect movie for Mel Gibson to be in, actually.
Yeah, this kind of came at a time when we talked about Mel Gibson was Mad Max, but this kind of launched him. This was
Mel Gibson, the action guy now.
Yeah.
Not that Mad Max wasn't. But.
Yeah, and then Richard Donner was at such a high point. I mean, this is leading up. Superman 2, The Toy, Lady Hawk, Goonies, and then Lethal Weapon. So, I mean, that's
a pretty good run.
That's a pretty good run. And then he continued. Scrooge, Lethal Weapon 2, Radio Flyer, Lethal Weapon 3, Maverick, Assassins, Conspiracy Theory, Lethal Weapon 4. Like, Richard Donner, I don't think his name comes up as much now as it... I mean, 16 Blocks was his last thing in 2006. But I don't think, even when you think back to, like, good directors of the 80s, I don't think he's one of the first names that come to mind.
Yeah.
When... That's a solid resume there.
Well, for sure. And it's the resume. I think there's very few people that can do action and comedy as well as Donner.
That three right there, The Goonies, Lethal Weapon, Scrooged.
Yeah.
Right. Those are three different genres, different movies.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not a Goonies fan, but I understand the appeal.
I can't understand.
I saw it when I was older.
God
so
damn.
But I get the appeal of it, and I understand why it's so... But even Lady Hawk, if you want to lump that in, that's...
And The Toy. I mean, these are really good movies, and it's not just... They're not action comedies. Not everyone is an action comedy. I mean, you have The Toy, which is a legitimate comedy. You've got Lethal Weapon, which is your action comedy. The Goonies, which is a kid's movie.
It's a kid's action comedy.
Yeah. And then you throw in Superman from 78. It's not a comedy at all. One of the most beloved superheroes of all time. Still, to this day, the most successful, I think, and the best Superman movie was his original from 78. And The Omen, as a horror movie from 76, they never got better than that. We talk about how Scorsese, no matter what genre he's doing, it's done really, really well. Donner didn't have the longevity that Scorsese did.
But still, I mean, you look from 86 to 2006. I mean, he tailed off there at the end. I'd say the last, like...
Well, 76 was The Omen, so I would give him another 10 years there.
Oh, that's what I meant. 76 to... I mean, up to... Conspiracy Theory was decent when it came out.
It.
Lethal Weapon 4, like... It's not until the 2000s that he started to taper off. So, I mean, he had 25 years where you don't just do that. You don't just get a 25-year career.
Oh, for sure. And now, I mean, he's done more producing, like some of the X-Men stuff he's been a producer on. But he's been responsible for, I mean, I love The Goonies. That's probably easily top 20 movies all time for me, maybe even top 10. I think Lethal Weapon is one of the best action movies, one of my favorite action movies. It's below Die Hard, but not very far below it. I hate the character of Superman, but if I liked that character more, it'd be very high on my superhero list. So it's the dude, he's maybe that band that had like two albums that were just incredible. They kicked ass and they were gone. But you can still go back and listen to those albums and still like them as much 15, 20 years later because they're still really good albums and the songs are still good songs. They're still catchy. They're still well-crafted. And that's kind of the way I look at The Goonies and Lethal Weapon. No matter, you know, I still like the sequels, but those movies were sort of genre-defining movies for me. And this guy's got those in a lot of different genres.
One of my favorite shots in Die Hard, and I explained that Die Hard, if you have Stars, the Stars package, Die Hard is always on at any given time. And in my house, if I'm flipping through the channels, Die Hard comes on anytime I see it. And I always explain to my girlfriend when Alan Rickman falls there at the end, like what they did. They told him they were doing it on three and they went on two just to get that reaction. Hunsicker's daughter at the beginning, like that chick, she did that jump. And it looks real because she jumped onto an airbag that they painted to look like the street so you can hold that shot as long as possible. And stuff like that is stuff that directors like Donner have the balls to do. And another interesting fact about this movie, we talked about, you know, he's not the first anti-hero. Maybe Murtaugh's the first, like, too old for this stuff guy. First movie to feature a cell phone.
Really?
Yeah.
That is an interesting little bit of trivia for that, for sure.
Yeah. Still holds up. Like, that's why I love movies like this and Point Break and Die Hard. Like, those are three action movies that I really, really hold dear to my heart. I think they hold up really well. Like, this is 87. Yeah, some of the clothes and stuff are dated, but as a movie, I mean, I think Shane Black's writing is so good. Because even something like Monster Squad, mm-hmm. I don't feel like, yeah, some of the language is dated. But, and I mean, this was 87. And look at Shane Black now. Like, he's working more than ever, you know? So 30 some years later.
And I hope, I mean, they've been talking about it for a long time. And I know you're not going to care because you're like some kind of communist that doesn't like the Goonies. But, I mean, they're still kicking that around. There was an article, Cinema Blend had it, back in November about Corey Feldman came up with this idea. Him and Sean Astin apparently are bros now.
They need to find somebody after the other Corey.
Yeah, so it's Corey and Sean now. It's the Goonies. They wrote this giant, it would have been like an Indiana Jones-esque, like globe-trotting, special effects laden script that would have been way, way too expensive. But Donner seems like he still wants to do it. The cast wants to do it. And I think Goonies and Ghostbusters are two, like, from my childhood that I would love to see come back. Ghostbusters, you know, obviously with Paul Feig's, we're not going to necessarily get the Ghostbusters I was hoping to in their advanced age. I mean, I'm sure we'll see them, but I would love to see a Goonies. And I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to seeing something like Lethal Weapon, where maybe now Riggs is the one that's too old for this shit. He's a little more like Danny Glover was when they started. And then there's, you know, maybe a young punk.
Well,
he
think
has to take
it'd be like
wing.
Riggs's kid. Like, that's the...
I wouldn't want it to be quite that on the nose.
No, but that's how it would be. That's just how it is. The Beverly Hills Cop reboot was supposed to be Eddie Murphy's kid or nephew or something. And I feel like there's still life there, but if it weren't Mel Gibson...
Mel Gibson now, yeah,
yeah,
that's a little
he's
tough.
He's poison right now. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing I think you could launch. Like, I would rather see a Lethal Weapon remake than a Point Break remake. Just
unfortunately.
Just because I think there's stuff you can do with it. I think you can still do something with Lethal Weapon and make it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be about cocaine, whereas Point Break sort of does kind of have to be about surfing to a certain extent.
You would think.
One would think. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of crimes that you could have to detect. And that's why, you know, there's much more of a genre for odd couple detectives than there is for undercover FBI infiltrating a surfing ring, which is the plot of Point Break. If you haven't seen that yet, check that out for next week.
Watch it by next week.
Yeah, that's your homework assignment, class, is to check out the 1991 Point Break starring Keanu Reeves.
Gary Busey.
The Busey,
Patrick
yeah.
Patrick Swayze, Lori Petty. But yeah, that's next week. As we wrap up December, we got Point Break next week, which I'm excited about. That's one of my favorite movies ever. And then the Uppies. We close out the year with our third annual Uppies, which is always one of my favorites to record. And then we're back first week of January with our favorites of 2015. So stick around for a few weeks, and then we'll kick off a new fiscal year, I guess is what we'll call it. We'll kick off a new calendar year.
Yeah, that sounds better. I mean, our fiscal year, what difference does it make? Like, it's $0.
Yeah, it's negative, actually. We're in the
that's true.
We're in the red. I got to pay for hosting. And we'll be back next week. Talking Point Break as a Christmas present to me. Thank you. Have a good holiday. Be safe out there if it's snowing. Thanks for listening. And until next week,
keep it up.